week, you will no longer get mail on Saturday.
That's good, that's fine. Okay, usually it's only bills come Saturday.
Are you ready?
Yes, yes. But then have Mrs. Zarifur to tell us a joke. Maybe later. Okay. Fine. So this is the next in the series about relationships. You know, Shlomo HaMelech says, Eizu Chacham HaLomed Mikol Adam, who is a smart person that is open to study, to learn from anybody. And also it says, Mikol Melamedai Hiskalti. So instead of like, you know, reinventing the wheel, I've been doing some research. And I introduced you to some good books, I think, that could really help relationships. We had, I think, Dr. Meir Wickler once or twice. This week, I think maybe I had Dr. Solomon before. I don't know if he's doctor. He's MSW. What's his right. I mean, he's, you know, this is my... I like professionals that also share the Torah world. So that would make a very nice shidduch. So this week, our host is Rabbi Yaakov Solomon. And you know, he starts, he says, you know, Hashem knows a lot about us, even more than Dr. Phil, Dr. Laura, and some other, you know, people that give advice about relationships, right? And Hashem tells us in the Torah, it's not good for man to be alone. Lo tov heyot adam levado. So I think I told you, I have a friend who's single, and he says, I'm the happiest man in the world. I told him, Nalat Sarve. I said, you could say whatever you want to say, but you know, if Hashem says, Lo tov heyot adam levado, if Hashem says, it's not good being alone, it's not good.
Something else.
Lo tov heyot adam levado, right? Lo tov heyot, it's not good. It cannot, if Hashem, if the creator of the world, of the world tells you that it's being alone, it's lo tov, you have to do something about it, right? So, make a bet? What is it?
No, bring your pet.
No, the Torah says, Ezelo Ezel Kenegdo. Ezel Kenegdo means he needs
a dog, yeah.
Ezel, I doubt a dog it could be Ezel Kenegdo. So, fine. As a matter of fact, you know, the Torah says when a person gets married, the first year after he gets married, he's not going to be drafted to any army, he's exempted from everything. Because he's starting a war at home, he cannot fight in two different battlegrounds simultaneously. So he doesn't go out on any wars. Hi. Fine. So, you know, but, you know, I saw one of the articles that this Rabbi Yaakov Solomon has, he calls it the March. March, M-A-R-C-H, and he puts, you know, the five ingredients of a great marriage. And you see, I liked, you know, the way he puts it. There are a lot of people that have recipes, etc., but he, I think, you know, from the research I made, I liked his approach. See, actually, this is what a married life is. Married life, more than anything, it's like about sharing life. I remember there was a time that, you know, here the JCC had separate swimming, and I always enjoyed swimming from my college days. So I used to go there swimming every week. So once I saw there was a sign in the locker room, somebody had lost his graduation ring. So he put a $500 reward for whoever finds, and he wrote the whole Megillah where he said, like, you know, said, to other people it doesn't have any value, but to me, you know, I graduated, like, you know, 40 years ago, whatever, and this ring has been with me through my life, so it has a lot of sentimental value, right, for me. And you see, if I was thinking a ring that it's an object just the fact that you share life with, you know, having it, it's so valuable to you. Could you imagine if you really actually would share your life with somebody? Right. This is what married life is. So there is a. There is a, whatchamacallit, there is this, The Little Prince. Did everybody read this book, The Little Prince? So over there he talks about a pilot, right, falling in love with a flower, right? So this flower actually is teaching this pilot about love. So he tells, so the pilot says, you know, what are you talking about, like, you know, love this and that? He doesn't know what it means. He says, there are hundreds of flowers out there prettier than you. Something like that. So she tells him, you're right. Right now there are a lot of flowers out there. But when you commit in a relationship, right, so then every day I'm going to be waiting for your footsteps when you come, and you knock on the door, and I'm going to greet you when you come in, this and that. So you see, this is what you build in a relationship, right? Yes. Prior to making that commitment, there are a lot of flowers out there, a lot of options, alternatives. But the whole thing is about the relationship is that committing to each other and sharing life together. Right, sharing life together. This world is too heavy for one person to carry on his own shoulders. And being in the proper relationship, it's somebody that you could really share. And if you don't share, you don't have, you don't enjoy. It's like the joke about this reformed rabbi on the way on Yom Kippur morning, right? Before he goes to his temple, he decides to go to play golf, right? On the way, right? So he goes there and he scores the highest, like, you know, I don't know, whatever it is in golf. So then, you know, the malachim, the angels in Shamayim, tell Hashem, why did you make him, like, you know, win so big? And Yom Kippur, a rabbi, he's going to play golf and you make him win? Hashem laughs and says, who could he share this with? Whom could he go and brag about that, you know, that on Yom Kippur he, you know. So in other words, since he can't share it, then you don't have the pleasure. If you don't share something that you have, if you if you have something, so you can't wait to go and to share it with other people. So life is about sharing. It's about, like, you know, two people that march together through this journey of life, right? And I'll just tell you another Talmudic story. It has a lot of lessons to it. The Gemara tells us, Masechet Sukkah, it says one of the sages, he heard a certain man and a woman, strangers, not married to each other, they made up to meet each other in the middle of the night, in the middle of a jungle. So he got very suspicious. He said, you know what, I'm going to go there to make sure that everything is going to be kosher, etc. So he went there, and, you know, he was hiding, I guess, behind a tree or something. He said, yes, they came there in the middle of the night, in the middle of this jungle, and they met, and they are going on a, you know, they're walking to each other, talking and going and going, and he's, like, you know, trailing behind. So they were walking the whole night, and when it was, like, you know, daytime, so they came to a place, they were split in the way, they just said goodbye, right? And they said the way was long and it was beautiful to have companion, and each one of them went on his way, his and her way. So this rabbi said, I swear to God, if it would have been me, I don't think I would have been able to control myself. Right? In other words, to have the yetzer hara, to have the evil inclination. But you see the beautiful, I mean, there are a lot of stories. So this guy, he was about to faint. So Eliyahu HaNavi appeared to him and told him, you know, it's, you know, he says, the greater a person becomes, the stronger his evil inclination for him to have free choice, right? So that's one story, one lesson from the story. But the main thing what I like about the story is, like, it says the journey is long, that's what they said, and it's beautiful to have a companion, right? To go on that journey alone, it's very depressing. It's good to have companions. So tonight, I wanna give you the marching orders. Right? I mean, not me. From this Rabbi Yaakov Solomon, how to march in this journey happily. So it comes out, reads M-A-R-C-H. Right? Five lessons that he gives, right? So the Rashi Tevot is march, M-A-R-C-H. First of all, we have to realize, you know, how do I build a relationship on strong footing and make sure it keeps growing? How do I avoid some of the pain and distress that inevitably comes? What rules can I follow to make my marriage work? And why must it always be so complicated? We have to realize, having Shalom Bayit, it's a mission. It's an uphill battle. Right? It is very complicated. It's not something you see. In Pirkei Avot, it says a person should be Ohev Shalom veRodef Shalom. That's the terminology. Mm-hmm. Rodef Shalom means you have to chase after peace. In other words, if you stand in one place, it's going to go away from you. Right? Maharal says people think that the normal order of things is to be calm. And then sometimes it breaks down and you have to repair it. He says, Pirkei Avot tells us the opposite. If you don't do constant maintenance, it for sure it's going to break down. That's what it's saying. The person has to be Rodef Shalom. In other words, if you don't do maintenance, if you stand in one place, you are not going to have Shalom Bayit. It's something that needs constant work. You see, we are not talking about Kabbalah tonight, but you see, you have to realize wherever there is potential for Kedusha, for holiness, always the Satan was created. Satan, Shaitun, whatever you want to call it, was created to combat wherever there is potential for goodness, for holiness. This is where the Satan is going to dwell. That's his mission. It says, we always pray, the Satan is always, wherever there is potential for holiness, for Kedusha, whatever, the Satan is there. That's, and as a matter of fact, if you know, this is one of my favorite Divrei Torah from Rabbi Meir Shapira in Lublin. He says, we know when Avraham Avinu wanted to go to do Akedat Yitzchak, right, to sacrifice his son, whatever that means, we know the Satan was trying constantly, right, to put stumbling block on his way. It became like a river, in a mountain, whatever you name it, created all kind of obstacles to stop Avraham Avinu from doing the mitzvah of Hashem. The last minute, Avraham Avinu is about to do the Akedah, a voice tells him, no, don't sacrifice your son. You see that ram that is entangled in the tree, in the bush? Take that one and sacrifice it. So how wasn't he sure that this is not the Satan talking? A voice is telling him, no, don't sacrifice your son. Take this ram. Maybe it's another gimmick of the Satan. So Meir Shapira Lublin says, because Avraham Avinu saw that this ram is entangled. If it's entangled, it cannot be Maaseh Satan. Whatever the Satan does goes very smoothly. If it's very deep. Anything, you see, always Niyan Korek Kedusha Amshi Gizdare. Right? Whatever, you know, you see, for instance, they see, like, they want to build, like, you know, let's say,
synagogue.
A temple. If the Reform Conservative, they want to build, like, you know, $200 million project. The money is going to be gathered in no time. Now, if you want to build a shul, a real Torah place, it's $18, $26, $120. Constantly, it doesn't go. It's very difficult. But this is an indication, always, anything that has to do, you know, good things in life, you have to work on it hard. Right? That's a rule. Over there, Avraham Avinu knew if it's entangled, it cannot be Maaseh Satan. Whatever the Satan does goes smoothly. So here it's like, you know, the Satan always couldn't see Beit HaMikdash, because Beit HaMikdash the temple is where the Shekhinah resides in this world. So always he would bring about that the Beit HaMikdash would be destroyed. And now that we don't have Beit HaMikdash, our homes are Beit HaMikdash. Right? We don't have the time, you know, I'm going over time already. Right? I have a lot to say. But you have to realize that, you know, the Gemara says Avraham Avinu called Beit HaMikdash a mountain, a har. Yitzchak Avinu called it a sadeh, a field. Yaakov Avinu called it a bayit. So the Gemara says, not like Avraham and not Yitzchak, Beit HaMikdash is a bayit. The home is Beit HaMikdash. And you see, and the Satan cannot see that there is, when you have in between a couple, you have love and harmony, Satan cannot see that, because that means the Shekhinah is there. And Satan is there to make sure, right, that the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. So now he does his utmost to create machloket and division and fights in homes. I know there is a story in the Gemara. There was a couple. Always, every Friday they would have fights. Every Friday. I mean, there is a lot to do. Prepare these hectic. So they went to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir said, I'll come and take care of it. So Rabbi Meir went to their house one Friday, and as soon as, you remember last week we spoke about you have to stop the milk before it starts boiling, right? So when he would see it's starting, and he would calm things down. So he did it one Friday. The second Friday, right, at the end of the second Friday, they heard a voice, actually, a voice. It was the voice of the Satan that said, Oi, oi vei to Satan that Rabbi Meir kicked him out of his house. So you see that in this, it's mamash, the Satan is there to create the fight. And Ben Ishchai also says, Ben Ishchai says that Friday the person should be calm, etc., because he should know it's not like, you know, his wife or his kids or whatever that you are, you know, it's a Satan. The Satan is there to make things like, you know, to create nervousness and tension. So that's why it's complicated. That's why Shalom Bayit, it's not easy. Because there are supernatural forces here, right, that they are trying, they cannot see Kedusha. They cannot see that there is peace, right? And that's why Pirkei Avot says, a person should be what? Ohev Shalom v'rodef Shalom. A person has to be rodef Shalom. Rodef means, right, you have to chase after it. It's like it's something that's running away. It needs constant maintenance. See, whoever has in a lower back problems, disc problems, you know, right? If you exercise every day a few minutes and you watch it, right, so then you're going to be fine. But if not, chas v'chalila, if you don't do the daily maintenance, you know, it's going to be a disaster. The same thing is with the Shalom Bayit. It needs constant maintenance. So let's follow the marching orders of Rabbi Yaakov Solomon.
So M is for maintenance?
What's that?
M is for maintenance.
No. Wait, okay. So now he says, I do not include trust, respect, and love on my list. And we covered these, you know, in our previous classes, right, that, you know, trust is essential. If there's no trust, there's no relationship. Respect, kavod, we have spoken about so many times. We spoke about, like, you know, controlling voice last week. We spoke about anger, kavod. So those are taken for granted. Trust, respect, and love. So now we go to the M, right? So, you know, he says, I do not claim to live as the perfect example of what I describe here, just ask my wife, right? I would second that. So it's, you know, it's like I just said, do the way I preach, not the way I do practice, right? So first, the M stands for mutual goals.
Mutual what?
Mutual goals.
Mutual goals. That's very important. See, if husband and wife, they have different goals in life, like, you know, if you have, like, if one of them is very much family oriented, they want to have kids, but, you know, this is where their focus, and the other one, the only thing they are concerned about is, like, you know, having fun and traveling, this and that, it's not going to work. And also in other areas, also when it comes, like, you know, to religious commitment, etc., it's very important. They need to be on the same boat. I always tell you know, couples that come to talk to me, you know, young couples, I say, look, you see, before they get married, if one of them is more observant, the other one is less, I said, look, you need to be basically, you know, more or less on the same wavelength, because otherwise, as it is, it's an uphill battle. Satan is constantly there, right? So it's like, you know, imagine somebody is, like, you know, struggling, going up a mountain, and you come and you put a 200-pound weight on him to add to it. It's going to make it impossible, right? So these mutual goals, it's very important that, you know, basically they're in the same ballpark as far as, like, you know, financial expectations, right? Where they are in life, where they want to be, and, you know, it has to do with the, you know, life philosophy, and as I said, the religious aspect also. It's very important. This, you see, this could really cause a lot of distress if there is a big. You see, it's good always if one of them, I think, it's more spiritual, more religious, it's better, provided the other one is not going to fight. That they want to move together. So they said, well, this guy, somebody was lost in a jungle for months. Didn't know where he's going. Finally, after a few months, he arrives at the crossroads, and he sees an old man with gray beard sitting there, and he says, "Oh, master, I'm so happy I found you. Which way should I go? Should I go east, west, north, south? I'm lost. I don't know which way to go." So this master, like, smiles and he points up. He says, "This is the right way to go. The right way is going to get close to Hashem. It's not east. It's not west. It's not north. Right? This is the right way to go. Right? That this is the right way to grow, obviously. But you see, the point is that they need to be in the same ballpark, right? So mutual goals are very, very important. You may not be 100% certain about your objectives in life." But you do need to know enough about them to see if your relationship mate is on the same page, right? Being on the same page, as far as, like, you know, these general goals in life are, it's a must. This is the M of the marching orders. The A is appreciation. Appreciation is very, very important. I always say it under the chuppah. That's the reason why we say Shechianu under the chuppah also. Shechianu v'kiemanu v'idyanu l'azman hazeh. Because we are called Yehudim, Jews, right? Because the Yehudi, the root of it, it's Todah, it's thank you. That's what Yehudi means. And actually, see, the Chidush HaRim says more than that. It says, the Chidush HaRim says that, you know, we had four mothers, Arba Imahot. Each one of them was supposed to have three of the Shvatim, three of the tribes, right? So when Leah had her fourth son, she called him Yehuda. And she said, "Hapam odet Hashem, this time I have to thank Hashem because I got more than what I deserve. I should have gotten three, I got four," right? So Chidush HaRim says, being Jewish means at any given moment, all of us present here or listening on Kol HaLashon or otherwise, right? All of us, at any given moment, we have, our feeling has to be, I'm getting more than what I deserve. I have to appreciate what I have, right? We wake up in the morning with Modeh Ani Lefanecha. This is the first, as soon as we open our eyes, before Netilat Yadayim, anything, Modeh Ani Lefanecha, Modeh Ani Lefanecha, to be thankful. And you see, appreciation, it's a funny thing. The Gemara says, right, if you want to appreciate Hashem, first you need to appreciate people around you. Right? The Gemara says that this sense of appreciation, you cannot, like, you know, limit it between, oh yes, I say 100 brachot every day, blessings, I appreciate Hashem, I appreciate my spouse, I don't appreciate my friends, my kids, etc. It doesn't work like that. It's all interconnected, right? And the proof is in the Torah. We see Joseph had served the Egyptians so faithfully. He saved them, right? We see a Paro gets up and he says, the Torah says, "Vayakom Melech Hadash." There was a new king in Egypt. Asher lo yada'at Yosef. So Gemara says that, you know, he made himself, he didn't appreciate Yosef. The same person, the same Paro that did not appreciate Yosef, later on said, who is Hashem? He didn't appreciate Hashem. The Gemara says, you see from here clearly, if a person doesn't appreciate his surroundings, other human beings, he's not going to come to appreciate Hashem either. This sense of appreciation, it's interconnected. So the M is mutual goals, the A is appreciation. And you see, it's very important, you know, my father of blessed memory, so many times, and it made such an impression on me and my brothers, all of us, he would say, whatever I have is from my wife. Right? And you see, he was saying, and it's very important. It's very important for both, for husband and wife, to express that, to have that sense of appreciation. You know, the whole story of Rabbi Akiva, everybody knows that. The Talmud is not very romantic. But in one of those romantic moments, there are two romantic moments so far in Daf Yomi we have seen. Right? One is about Avraham Avinu. It says in the Bava Batra that, Rabbi Chia went to Avraham Avinu, Rabbi Avinu's head was on Sarah Imenu's lap. Right? That's what the Gemara says. And also the Gemara says that, when Rabbi Akiva, when he got married to Rachel, his wife, he was Amharic. He didn't know Alephbet, nothing. But Rachel, Rabbi Akiva's wife, she saw that he has a lot of potential. And she was coming from a very wealthy family. Her father, Kalbosova, was one of the richest people in Yerushalayim. So when he heard that his daughter, Rachel, wants to marry Rabbi Akiva, he disowned her. He said, I'm not going to this Amharis that doesn't even Alephbet. He didn't care about money. But he knew that the Gemara says a person should marry off his daughter to Talmid Chacham. And this guy's Amharis doesn't know anything. So he disowned her. So the Gemara tells us, when they got married, their hejle, their chuppah was in a barn. And they didn't have any matches, they had just they had some straw there, right? So in the morning, Rabbi Akiva was taking a piece of straw out of his wife's hair, and he said, someday I'm going to get Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. This Yerushalayim Shel Zahav that Naomi Shemer made a song out of it, but Yerushalayim Shel Zahav is the name of a certain jewelry, golden jewelry. He said, someday I'm, and he did, eventually. So it's very interesting, just in parentheses I'll add, that the Gemara says when they woke up, there was a knock on the door. So the knock on the door was Eliyahu HaNavi. But Eliyahu HaNavi had disguised himself. He came and he said, my wife just gave birth, you don't have anything. Can I borrow some straw from you? So he told his wife, you see, there are people that they're even worse off than us. Okay. The Gemara, it says, Bashamayim mima'al va'al ha'aretz mitachat. Right, we say in the prayers. Always Bashamayim in heavenly things, spiritual things, we should always see who is higher than me, to strive to go higher. Al ha'aretz mitachat, but when it comes to gashmiut, to materialistic things, always we should know there are people that they are less than us. Right? So here, at least we have straw. This guy is coming to ask, right, if you could lend him some straw. So appreciation. So then you know that when Rabbi Akiva, Rachel sent her to go to learn Torah. He went after 12 years. He came back with 12,000 students. And when he came back, he heard his wife was talking to a lady, a neighbor, and this lady was telling her, where is your husband? She just left you. Where? So she said, if it was up to me, I would go tell him to go and to learn another 12 years. Rabbi Akiva heard that, and he went back for another 12 years, and he had 24,000 students. So when he came back, and his wife came to greet him, so the students wanted to push her back. So Rabbi Akiva said, leave her alone. He said, Sheli v'shelachem shelahu. He said, all the Torah that I have, and you have, it's from her. By the way, this is when my Rosh Hashiva's wife passed away. So my Rosh Hashiva, he made a beautiful thing. Just this is what was written on it. Beautiful art. You should know this beautiful yeshiva that he built, right? Almost 1,000 students. And he says, it's all because of my wife. Sheli v'shelachem shalah. Appreciation. Appreciation in a marriage, it's everything. Right? And it goes both ways. Right. It goes both ways. You know, both spouses. And you see in Persian they say, in Sheli Shvach Qadra Hamdigeran Adonim. Right. What does it mean? That unfortunately, we don't appreciate things, right, till we don't have it. And this is very sad. Right? The appreciation has to be, while we could express our appreciation in person. So this is so we had mutual goals. That was the M. The A is appreciation. Number three is reaching out and taking in. You see, I guess he wants the march to fit. It's basically the give and take in marriage, right? What he calls reaching out and taking in. You see, we have to realize each one of us, we have different needs, right? And the needs are not the same, right? You see, I spoke about it just recently. You see, the Gaon says, when the Torah talks about giving, being a giver, the Torah says, "Potuach tiftach," you should open your hand. You should open your hand. Well, okay, fine. And the Torah repeated this from that Pesukim 5 times. "Potuach tiftach, potuach tiftach." Right? It says, you should open your hand. So the Gaon asks, what's the big deal about opening your hand? You should open your pocket. Okay, don't hold the money in your hand. Open it and give it. But why is the Torah emphasizing over and over that when it comes to giving, you have to open your hand? The Gaon says, when you close your hands, yet all the fingers look equal, the same size, right? Try it, you see, it's pretty much, it look all the same. When you open your hand, you see, no, they are not the same size, right? So the Gaon says, the Torah is telling you, when you want to be a giver, open your hand to realize that everybody has different needs. It's not the same size. Wow. Some people, right, need money. Some people need time. Some people need attention. Some people need somebody to talk to, right? You have to realize, right, that it's an unbelievable message. Hashem is telling you, being a giver, it's not just with money. A lot of times, I know from speaking to couples, what their wives want. Usually what happens, they want their husband to spend time with them, to talk. Ladies need to talk a lot. This is part of Hashem's creation. If you have complaints, go to Hashem. It says, as if the Gemara says, if they are asara kabin, if there are 10 units, let's say, of speech that came to the world, 9 of them go to the ladies, 1 to the men. Okay, this is actually, and there are reasons for it. There are Kabbalistic, other reasons for it. But you see, it's a need. And you cannot say, don't have this need. People have, the fingers are not equal. That's why Hashem says, open your hand. And you see, that's why this give and take we have to see, right, in a relationship, reaching out and taking in, we have to see what our spouse needs and to try to meet those needs. And you see, it cannot be also, you say, the relationship should be 50-50. It's like, it doesn't work like that. There are different areas. Some areas, maybe it's 90-10. Some areas, maybe 60-40. We have to see, it says, real balance is achieved when you understand how it works in each unique relationship. You may be very generous with your money, but less with your time. Right, you may be very needy of compliments and affirmation, But material gifts and positions are not are meaningless to you. You have to see, really, you know, they are different people. And you see, one of my teachers always used to say, look, you know, every relationship, he would say it in Yiddish, every shtub, every house is different. You have to see what are the needs. There are certain ladies that, you know, I mean, everybody loves compliments. But some people, the compliments don't mean they want the beef. They want to get the gift or whatever it is. By some it's verbal, by some it's, you know. So in other words, this give and take, and in realizing, Sefer HaChinuch says that the reason why we alluded to this before, that in the first year after marriage, Hashem exempts the Chatan from going to war, a lot of civil duties, because they need to study each other. Sometimes this first year takes 30, 40 years, who knows, right? To get, you know, you have to study to the needs, what are, right, to realize, right, in the Chinuch says, you have to say, okay, this is wife, this is husband, right? You take in inventory of all the qualities, all the needs, all the pluses, minuses, and you see, we have to be accepting, right? It says, you know, the only perfect being is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? We spoke about this before. It says, "V'ahavta racha kamocha." We love ourselves even though we are far from being perfect. The same way that we are understanding and accepting of our own shortcomings and misperfections, we have to be understanding of our spouses as well. And to study the needs and try to be, the key is know yourself and know the other party in the relationship. When you know what you need most and what you are capable of giving, the delivery system works. The better you know yourselves and each other, the better you'll both be able to get what you need and give what you should. I think it's very, very important. So this is, so we had what? We had mutual goals, then we had appreciation, reaching out and taking in. We have two more to go. One is, the C is communication, right? We have spoken about this before, but you see, this is probably the most overused and least understood concept in the world. You see, naturally, words are the building blocks of good communication, but much of how we feel and what we need is conveyed. See, it's not, communication is not just with words. You know, a lot is done also through, it's conveyed through body language, right? So mood and expression. When a relationship is in trouble, the parties often complain that they cannot be expected to read minds. We spoke about this, that, you know, we should not really rely on that our spouse should read our minds. A lot of times, you see, I told you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not wake up Adam HaRishon from that first operation, right? A lot of times, like, you know, men or women, they don't get the clues. So in those kind of situations, definitely, we have to be expressive. But we have to realize that communication is not just through words. It's also, there is body language, etc. But, you see, mind reading should never be an expectation. I think he puts it beautifully. Mind reading should never be an expectation, but it can be an acceleration. When you see that in your spouse could read your mind, it's beautiful. It's very, it gives certain pleasure of like, you know, I once read a story about, like, you know, two giants, two sages. They wanted to meet each other, and, you know, they had, each one of them had their shamash that would accompany them. So they go, like you know, few hours, each one of them to come to meet in a place. They go there, and they are there, like, you know, for an hour and a half. They don't even say a word, and after that they say bye and they leave. They were just, you know, communicating without saying any words, just being there in that room. I don't know how, but, you know, you see the ultimate in communication is when people could understand each other without even using any words. And in Kabbalah also they say, like, you know, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he appeared to Moshe Rabbeinu, it was like in demama, it was in silence. Right, and so this is the most profound way of communication, but it's not, a lot of times, as I said, it's not for, in a lot of times, the clues are missing, etc. And those cases, obviously, right, the communication should be verbal. So he says it beautifully. He says, mind reading should never be an expectation, but it can be an acceleration. Couples who have attained an exceptional level of togetherness often report a unique ability to know exactly what their spouse feels and thinks and desires at any given time. Right? You see, this is amazing. Like, you know, to be able, like, you know, you could see what your spouse would think in a certain situation. And it comes also with effort and a resolve that you want to get there. Right? It has to be, we have to be tuned to it. So, of course, this requires a dedication and a commitment to being totally in tune with one another, and it does take some serious time to develop it, right? It takes, really, you know, long time to get there. And being a good communicator does not mean that you feel free to bare your soul. It does not mean that, you know, that, you know, everything has to be in the open and let it all hang out. That's like saying that freedom means being able to do whatever you want. That's life in today's wrapped... True freedom is the ability to intelligently evaluate your choices before acting. And communicating well involves an assessment of what to say and when and how to say it. And also when to say absolutely nothing at all, right? You know, this is an art of, you know, communication. You see, it's very, very important. You know, I probably have heard me say it a few times, you know, in the classes, you know, that how careful we have to be about, you know, using words. I always say the story from Rabbi Shulman, that he says there was this guy that, you know, had moved to a new home, and he then new blinds. So he goes to Home Depot, he measures this with the window, he goes to the Home Depot, he gives the measurement, and, you know, they cut it, right, brings it home, and it's few inches short. Can't do anything about it, right? This time he comes and he measures it exactly, right? The other time he had done it, like, you know, approximating. So this time he measures it exactly, goes back, and he says, you know, he says, I went to the Home Depot and he, you know, I gave him a measurement, he cut it, I paid again, the first one was wasted. He says, before I left, I look at this guy, the guy that cuts the curtains in the Home Depot, he had a big apron. On it, it was written, right, measure twice, cut once. Measure twice, cut once, right. And he said, you know, to me it was such, this sentence was everything. He says, you know, with the blind, it's not a big deal. But he says, it's also with words. Measure twice, cut once. Before you say a word, think about it twice. Because once you say it, that's it. Once it's said, you cannot correct it, right? So as he puts it, so communication, it's not about only about words, it's also this body language, as we said. And it says communication will involve, as we said, an assessment of what to say and when and how to say it, and also when to say absolutely nothing at all. Sometimes the right communication is really not to say anything. Last week we spoke about this, like, you know, that usually it's recommended before any criticism to wait 24 hours. At least 24 hours before you criticize. You see, you compliment right, always on the spot, but you never criticize on the spot. To give compliments, right away. Compliments, if it's afterwards, it's not as effective. But to criticize, you always need to slip over it, to say it, you know, the right time and the right way, and always to start with something positive. We spoke about that. Fine. So the edge of this marching orders, the last one is healing with forgiveness. Life is short and complicated and precious. If you allow your sensitivities to dominate, you will forever be depressed and resentful. You may also find yourself pretty lonely. Nobody wants to bond with people who are stuck in the victim role all the time. A great relationship does not get bogged down by life's, you know, miscues. It moves on. People are not perfect. They are far from it. We all make mistakes all the time, right? You see, it's, you know, some say, like, you know, what the most, what the three most important words in a relationship, I love you, three words. But, you know, I am sorry, everybody says it's much more important. Everybody makes mistakes. We have to realize we all make mistakes, right? And, you know, just these three words, right? It's really, you know, but see, the problem is we have the genes of Adam HaRishon, right? Adam HaRishon, you see, a lot of things will be inherited from Adam HaRishon, you know. He had children, but he didn't have in-laws. So we love our children, but we don't exactly love our in-laws, right? Because we didn't inherit it from Adam HaRishon, right? We don't know how to deal with in-laws because of that, right? So you see, Adam HaRishon, one of his biggest, the sin of Adam HaRishon wasn't that the problem wasn't the sin. It was expected. The problem was the aftermath. After he sinned, instead of acknowledging it and saying, Hashem, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. What did he blamed his wife. He said, it's not me, she's to be blamed, right? And you see, the Mekubalim tell us that David HaMelech compliments Adam HaRishon. You know, Adam HaRishon was supposed to live 1,000 years. He lost 70 years. He gave David HaMelech lived 7 years. To combine, it makes the 1,000. So and they say David HaMelech exactly compliments Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon's problem was that he would not take responsibility. He would make, when he made a mistake, he refused to take responsibility. David HaMelech is the opposite. He sinned. Whenever he would sin, he would say, "Chatati LaHashem, it's me. I made a mistake." And you see, this taking responsibility, you know, they say, like, you know, the finger, pointing finger, you know, it's his fault. It's very difficult to turn it around against ourselves. And we need to exercise. That's the reason why we say vidui. We make confession 3 times a day. You know, we go to sleep, we say, Ashamnu, Bagadnu, Gazalnu, I sinned, I made a mistake, etc. In the morning, mincha time 3 times, because we need a lot of, you know, training for that, exercising, right? It's to take, people make mistakes. We make mistakes. So therefore, you see, saying the words and acknowledging that, you know, we make mistakes. And, you know, again, from my experience, men much more readily, they would say, I made a mistake, than ladies. I mean, it happens to me constantly. You know, when couples come to me, I ask them, when was the last time I asked the husband that you made a mistake and he said, you missed, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. So he would tell me, like, a couple of days ago. And I asked the lady, I don't make mistakes. It's always his fault. It's his fault, right? Usually that's the truth. They want to get even with Adam HaRishon, I guess. But you see, everybody makes mistakes. And you see, a sincere, I'm sorry, I'm only human being, I'm only basar vadam. It goes, provided it's sincere, and the ability to accept that confession and to move on, right? As he says, right? Life is, we had a teacher. I told you the story. We had a teacher in school. That she said that, and she said she has a friend that she can't live with herself, because this lady, her friend, had a fight with her husband, And, you know, he went to sleep and he never woke up. And she always feels guilty that, you know, that's how the relationship ended. He died that night. I mean, he had some sickness. You see, the fact that he did not make up, right, it killed her. That's why, you know, we have a halakha every night before we go to sleep. We don't just say Shema and we say we do Hashem no Bagad no. It's also we say Hareini Mochel Nesoleach, that we forgive people, right? Obviously, to forgive wholeheartedly, you need an apology. But see, I told you, Rav Levi, the founder of Otzar HaTorah in Iran, my father was very close to him. So once Rav Levi, he was one of the Shahristan, now one of the cities not to be named, that they had gone to the government. They said that he's a spy, a British spy or a communist spy. They put him in jail. Why? Because he was teaching Torah. Right, I think they accused him of being, I don't know. So he told my father, he said that, you know, for a few nights he couldn't go to sleep. They asked him why. He said, because in order to go to sleep and to say Shema, I had to forgive these people and I couldn't forgive them. It took me a few days till I really convinced myself that, you know, these are like, you know, Tinokot Shenishbu, these are like little kids taken into captivity, they were brainwashed, etc. I was able to bring myself to forgive them. So then I said Shema and went to sleep, right? So this is something that we need to practice. So, and your ability to admit when you are wrong goes a long way in helping the forgiving process to develop and to endure. If it's so difficult to utter those three magical words, I was wrong, right, that I often recommend that people should stand in front of the mirror and repeat the phrase 20 or 30 times a day, okay, just to get more comfortable with it. You can start with 5, okay? So, you know, this is, I said, you know, we do that, we say, it's really to get in the practice of make mistakes. Ashamnu, Bagatnu, right? It's all the alphabetical, we have the whole alphabet over there. So anyway, to conclude, like every great march, right, M-A-R-C-H that we saw tonight, the key is that, you know, for marches to be beautiful, it needs to be in sync, right? The couple need to be together, right, marching. When everybody stays in line, keeps focus, and plays their music, the result is a beautiful parade. Let the band play. Very nice. So this was again tonight, was from Rabbi Yaakov Solomon. You could find this article on the ish.com, and Be'ezrat Hashem will continue. We're going to have two more sessions in English about relationships, and then the Tuesday before Pesach. I don't expect to see any ladies here. Then it's the last Tuesday. It's going to be about a relationship with Hashem, and that's going to be in Persian. Okay, have a nice week.